Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center Andor podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I'm thrilled that there will be another voice after I'm done speaking.
It's me! Is there more?
Nope.
Yes, it's me, Jennifer Landa. I'm back from my vacation.
Jennifer is the sweetest person in the world. She's like, oh, someone else is on the show today.
Oh, who is it?
Jen's back. Jen's back.
I was just sad the last 2 weeks when Ken said, I'm Ken. Now I'm second. I'm saying, and I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. And oh, no, Jennifer.
No, I am back running through that curtain onto stage.
Nice.
We got a big show planned today because, well, we had some news stories that we had pulled and we're going to discuss. Maybe some other time we'll get to them. But, Good Morning America, America's morning show, I think. I don't know. It's been a long time since I watched it, but the Star Wars fandom did. We had Diego Luna showing up on the show and dropping the first official Andor trailer, not a teaser, the trailer. And we're going to talk about that all today. We're going to go in deep. We're going to break it down. We're going to do what we love to do here at Force Center. Before we get to that, we remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Force Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. I'm talking fast because I'm excited. I'm Star Wars nerd excited. But we are going to catch up. We need to catch up because Jennifer was traveling the world and she's back. Jen, any Star Wars adventures out there in the galaxy?
I always say that Star Wars is everywhere. Turns out it's not in the countryside of Italy. I was looking when we went to Florence in the little marketplace. That's not true. We went into the Lego store in Florence and there it was. They had their little Star Wars section. So I lied. Star Wars is everywhere. I wanted to obviously go to Lake Como and visit real life Naboo, but maybe another time. So yeah, it was wonderful. It was wonderful, wonderful food, relaxing. I even managed to shoot some videos during my downtime about Star Wars. So that was fun, but nice. I'm happy to be back.
Those were some great videos and I was watching them and saying, this is great. Wait, was this made in Italy?
Stamped, made in Italy. Yes, yeah. Handcrafted. Oh,
that
yeah.
That is great. Were the Lego sets that you saw, were they only Naboo-based Lego sets to keep the Italy connection?
No, one was, I believe, the Book of Boba Fett, the throne room.
Oh, yeah.
I believe so. I had not seen that one in person. There was a Yoda. I was trying to check it out, but my kids wanted to see the Harry Potter and the Frozen section, so...
Enough toys to go around for all.
For exactly. Every fandom, absolutely.
That's that's awesome. You'll get back there. You'll get to Naboo. We'll all get back to Naboo at some point. Now, Joseph, what about you? Have you experienced or did you find Star Wars in your life this week?
I have experienced Star Wars. I really like that. It didn't just find me. I experienced it. The big thing this week is my wife and I got the chance to watch the first 4 episodes of the great documentary series Light and Magic. I know a ton of our listeners have already watched it, maybe watched it 2 or 3 times. I've seen people enthusing about it on the internet. I know Jennifer got to see it. It is so great. So just thrilling, inspiring, cathartic. It is great to hear all of the great stories about collaboration and working together. But I'm also really moved about this this sort of idea of like everybody collaborates and it works really well when there's a good leadership team with a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how much that's in this special that's about everybody working together to solve problems, but being pointed in the same direction because mm-hmm. Lucas is communicating what he wants. And there's just cathartic quotes about him being both creative and practical, and that sometimes people don't expect somebody to be both creative and practical. And I feel like that's how I am as a creative type. So that was very cathartic to hear. My wife reached over and patted my thigh. see, it's okay. You exist. My other favorite thing is in the first episode, I just kind of can't stop thinking about is the childhood films of a lot of the original ILM people that they showed in that first episode.
Yes.
But in particular, Dennis Mirren's, there's this one freeze frame of him as a child running from a skeleton. And it's just like, it's charming. It's funny. But like, I literally want a print of it. Like I'm kind of joking, but I'm not exaggerating. Like that's the human condition in one child's fan film of like, I'm alive, I'm thriving, but this skeleton's coming for me eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a thing of great beauty and just obviously endless wonderful things about that. But that was a really inspiring week of thinking about Star Wars through that documentary.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm about, through first 3 episodes there. And it's definitely going to be one that's on repeat. It just flows. And I saw a lot of people compare it like it's a bigger version of Empire Dreams. I think it hits on different things in that doc. Like you're saying, Joseph, it's a lot of creative people and, from Brian Ward tweeting about how it's affecting him in all sorts of ways. So I think that's there. Yeah, as far as those, I was blown away by those childhood films because, man, that just proves I'm not a filmmaker or a special effects person.
Like, oh, I had the same thought. It's like,
Yeah, watching Phil Tippett do frame by frame, you know, stop motion stuff. I was like, yeah, no, I can't. I don't have that patience. I'd run out the window. But then, you know, I was recording into microphones at 3. Go to your youth. That's what you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to be. I love what you're saying about that, Joseph. It's so good. That's a good Star Wars adventure.
A very good one. So how about you, Ken? Did you have any specific life or Star Wars adventures?
That's it. That's the one. Watch Light and Magic when I could. I've been reading Princess and the Scoundrel, which has been a lot of fun. I know you're enjoying that book as well, Joseph. Mm-hmm. We'll do a dive here in Force Center on that. And if you're an Ewok fan, Jen, I definitely recommend the book, at least the first 100 pages or so.
Wow.
We'll see. Yeah, no, there's some yub nubbing going on. And some great descriptions of Chirpa and Logray and what they bring to the table, both in good and maybe bad ways with Logray. Logray's an interesting character. A little pushy.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, some high quality Ewok content for sure.
Yeah. So it's just fun to kind of read that book and remind yourself, you know, at least me, you know, 83, 7 years old. This is what kind of started it all for me. And it has that same kind of vibe. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. So there you go. That's our Star Wars life adventures. We want to get to the main event here. And the main event is the Andor trailer, like we said, popping up. Not a surprise because, hey, the show's coming out on August 31st. Oh, wait, we're going to talk about that as well. Some new information. Diego Luna appeared on Good Morning America, announced this new release date for the series, now premiering on September 21st with three episodes, and then unveiled the new trailer, 2 minutes and 24 seconds. I've seen longer trailers, so I kind of wanted more, but then that's a lot of time to live with this wonderful thing. So let's go into the overall reactions here. Joseph, Jennifer, get in here and discuss our thoughts. What do you think about this release date change, Jennifer?
I was not happy. I was anxious. I thought, okay, we're going to get right into Star Wars, get back into it in August. I can't wait. Whoa. And then I was also confused, and maybe it's because I've been on vacation. I looked at Bad Batch. Bad Batch is premiering a week after Andor. Wasn't it supposed to be premiering in August? Am I remembering that correctly?
They were always going to overlap, right?
They were always going to overlap. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, oh, Bad Batch is going to be released in August still. That makes sense. They're going to separate Andor from Bad Batch, but now they're still close together, so it doesn't matter. But I'm not happy about having to wait at all.
It's the wait. It's the wait that's getting you, huh?
Yeah.
I respect that because I'm in that boat too. Joseph, are you waiting patiently like Yoda, or are you racing ahead like a young Jedi?
I think the thing about Jedi patience is you're not just like, I'm a Jedi, so yay, I'm automatically patient. You choose to use the skill of patience. Mm. And I am trying to be a Jedi and trying to use the skill of patience because I'm very frustrated. That was my initial reaction. Mm. I think it is just the hey, I was really excited for it. And it's less to me about this specific, hey, I got to wait a couple more weeks for Andor. I think I'm just frustrated by it. Don't want this to be the new reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it. Things change, and sometimes you just got to roll with them. But other times, you can, I think, voice, is this a good change? And I understand, like, the all the streaming services are in conflict, and they're, you know, moving around one another to try to get the maximum engagement. They're moving around their own shows as they try to decide exactly how much they want to overlap. But I also just kind of feel like it is, after a while, it is frustrating as a fan, right? You get the date announced and you make plans because you really want to center this in your life. You really want to make it important. And it's frustrating to kind of have the rug pulled out when all you want to do is celebrate the thing and have plenty of time to talk about it. The other thing that I think I need to use some Jedi patience on is the three episodes at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that might be a schedule thing. That might be about really getting the exposition out there of really saying like, hey, once the three episodes are in, now we're kicked into high gear. So you don't have to worry about any sort of people talking about it starting slow. Maybe that's the reason. But then you also pull back and there is this brewing conflict between the binge model and the weekly model. And right. Netflix is like claiming up and down like, no, we're committed to the binge model, but we did break Stranger Things four up into two chunks. But that, yeah. But it's still the binge model. And I think kind of all the other streaming services are on the other side saying, no, we're all about the weekly model, except two episodes is a big premiere. Three episodes is dabbling with the binge model, in my opinion.
Right. Right.
And you know, I'm not as big of a fan of the binge model. I think it's harder. It's great that we get to get more story and we get to gobble it all up. But I feel like if they're created as discrete episodes, I want to have the time and the space to absorb them as discrete episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of remixing what you both just kind of talked about. As a Star Wars fan, I'm really bummed. And look, hey, you know, do you complain about free pizza? Well, you know, if the wrong toppings are on it, you still might. I understand that point of view. I'm kind of bummed. I'm just really excited for the show, right? Very excited for the series. I was so excited when the news started to emerge that we're getting a trailer tomorrow morning. It's like, oh, we're so close. We're right there. So, yeah, it's a bummer. And I think it's okay to own that bummed feeling. Kind of like what you're saying there, Joseph and Jennifer, too, just really owning what we're feeling. Now, you know, jokes aside, you know, I am running a House of the Dragon and Rings of Power podcast these days. They're kind of revamping it, so I can live with a little extra space, but that's personal. That's not
right.
That's not right. But yeah, I think, I'm just going to add to kind of what you're saying. I think the cynical side sees it as a release day wars with the other streaming services. A little bit of Disney's feet stepping on themselves on their own feet with their slate of programming, trying to figure out what works best there. I don't know what the stats are showing them either way. It is what it is. And it's a high stake game. Obviously we get that. I know for a fact, HBO pulled one when they put House of the Dragon on the 21st of August, and Amazon had no idea that was coming. And it really upset a lot of things. And they had Rings of Power had put their flag on that September release. HBO said, "Cool, we're doing this," and that's just kind of, I guess, where we're at. So it's just the state of it. The one thing, I guess, the positive, I kind of with you, Joseph. There, I don't like the binge stuff, but I also was the kid. My mom would try to let me open up Christmas gifts the week leading up to Christmas, and I'd say no. My sister would unwrap them all. I would say no. I want something Christmas morning. But yeah, the three episodes, I want to be able to live with it, but it does, I guess the positive is help control a little bit of the discourse and narrative in today's kind of fast moving pundit world and fan world. I don't think that's the reason they did it, but if it's a positive byproduct, I'll sit on that space and kind of try to enjoy that as it comes, I guess. But yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The three episodes, I'll enjoy them. I think it does have a good benefit of the show will be kicked into high gear by the time it goes weekly. And yeah, just a little bit of patience to wait for Andor. So my frustration is less about Andor specifically and more about just the the reality is I don't trust any release dates.
Mm-hmm.
They've told me when Bad Batch is premiering and I'm like, cool. I don't believe you. You're now like my friend who says, like, of course I'll be there, to help you move. And you have those friends who say that to you. And you're like, yes, they will be there an hour early. And that other friend, like, you will maybe be there in time for pizza. And the streaming release dates are now the friend who might be there in time for the pizza after the moving party. I don't trust you. It's not smart for Bad Batch and Andor to be on the same night, I think. No. And with them moving everything around, it's like, cool, you've told me the release date of Bad Batch. Don't believe you.
Yeah, I once had a friend who was on the way to see one of my comedy shows, called me from the road to get parking instructions, never showed up, saw a restaurant on the side of the road, decided to go there instead. And the next day I was like, where were you? She's like, me and my friend, we got hungry, so we went to dinner instead. So
embracing the binge model. Yeah.
Yes, that is. Yeah. And binge dinner. That is the release date information. I'm with you on that there.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for letting me work through my feelings. I will now try to rely on my Jedi patience and move on.
Pizza for everyone at some point. We are going to dive into the trailer specifics and go beat by beat. Before we do that, though, we always love to get into the overall reactions to the trailer, see what's going on there. I'll just say this before I pitch it to you, Jen. This was a two English muffin breakfast trailer for me, as in I just kept rewatching it. So might as well keep eating breakfast. I had so much fun with this. I call this trailer When We Have to Look Up. And so many great themes there. Jen, let's get your overall thoughts on this trailer. And by the way, it's great to have you for these big trailer discussions. We haven't done this in a while.
I know, it worked out perfectly. What are the chances? The stars aligned. I will say, and I only watched it, I think, four times, and I wanted to keep watching it. Like you're saying, I could have continued. I had to take my kid to art camp, break it up. But I felt overall, it was so cinematic. It was like watching a Star Wars movie, and no shade to the other Star Wars series, but I could tell it felt very epic. It felt, they were shooting on location. The music, whatever that song was, it reminded me of like a horror movie. And I swear I was just thinking about it before we started recording. I'm like, where have I heard that kind of like that note? I've heard that before in either a trailer or from a horror movie. I can't think of it now. I'm sure I'll think of it over the next week or so. I loved the social commentary. This is going to be talking about things that are relevant to our world. It's not just, you know, pew pew and whatnot. This is as Star Wars always is, right? It's got that kind of deeper layer that you can dive into that we appreciate. And immediately after I watched it the first time, I ran over to my husband who was in the kitchen. I'm like, you have to watch this. You're going to actually want to watch this with me. I'm not going to have to make you watch it. And he was like, oh, okay. So then he watched it. And we started chatting about it. And that was really fun because he didn't get into the Book of Boba Fett and Kenobi. And so this, I'm excited to be able to share this with him because he really enjoyed Rogue One.
Yeah, we might have to do an entire episode on the Rogue One of it all. The appeal that movie has, the look, the feel, the tone, whatever. It definitely taps into certain a certain side of Star Wars, which is wonderful. Love all that stuff. Great thoughts there. Joseph, how many English muffins did you have for this trailer?
I had two as well, not metaphorically, but also literally. We are aligned in our breakfast choices these days, Ken. So you have to tell me what you're eating for lunch and maybe we can get all synced up. It'll be great. this was great. Any sort of wrestling with the state of release date, the industry realities that I had were kind of washed away by the actual excitement over the trailer. I think overall thing that I loved is the grit. I mean, I can just like, I felt like there was dirt in my teeth.
Yeah.
You know, after watching this, it is so getting into that grounded Rogue One vibe and also kind of what that means, right? Not just gritty as in it's cool, it's brutal or whatever, but it is dealing with real people, real experiences down on the ground. So for me, I thought it was like, I really liked how much the trailer seemed to emphasize this idea of kind of horror and hope. And I think, Jennifer, you're so right. The music does sound, you know, terrifying. Those kind of horns of doom slightly off, make you slightly nervous at the beginning. And then there's those little kind of tentative notes of hope. It's a very different style of music, but it still evokes that, like, this is a dark time, but is there even the possibility of clawing at some hope is the overall emotional vibe to me. I love, once again, that we're really focused on the kind of these two different worlds, people who are clearly workers, clearly connected with the earth, connected to the day-to-day, connected to reality. And then this great contrast of seeing Coruscant, seeing Mothma and these other characters in these just regal spaces, just carefully designed. And like, there's like, you know, a nice little kind of art designed tree in one of those spaces on Coruscant. And like, you see that and you compare that to the dirt. Right. And like, I watch this trailer and I see those just columns of steel that are Coruscant or space metal and think like those people I saw earlier in the trailer, they dug up that metal, you know, to make that world that the Imperials, the rich Imperials hanging in the sky are living in. And those politics are just so right there. Couple of big picture reactions is just, I love that we're getting more and more Mothma.
Yeah.
Every time we get more perspective on her, more tension, more outfits. That shot of her blue jacket in the Senate with the sad Imperial logo on the pod might be my favorite shot in the trailer. I'm so excited for the Mothma. And final big picture reaction, I really like that it ended with those multiple flashes of Andor doing lots of different things, because I'm all in for Andor's slow moving away from nihilism to being all in to the cause. But I also want that forward movement of seeing a tense spy thriller where it's an ensemble, but our main character Andor goes on multiple missions.
Yes.
There's something about that that's so right, especially the, like, even the final shots of the TIE fighter and the kind of the red flame like sky behind him. It's like, oh yeah, don't forget, there's some action coming. He's not just going to sit there contemplating his future.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's not just going to be like a sad music video where he's on a hill all the time. He's going to do some stuff.
Yeah, no, wonderful. I'm with you both on the, on this ominous music and just kind of the mood that creates. It's some great stuff. Ah, so good. And, you know, I always, much like release dates, I don't trust all the trailer music because sometimes it's just for the trailers and we'll have to find it somewhere else. Right. But loved it. Yeah, loved it. And this trailer setting the tone of the show and the importance of this time period. I think the stress, the espionage angle, just kind of the weight of it all really kind of shown through for me. There's obviously, like you, like you're discussing there, just a lot to learn character-wise, lessons to learn for all of us. And I don't know, there's something about it too, where it's like, I know things turn out kind of good for the rebellion, right? I've seen, I've seen some of the other films. Things seem to go okay. I just really, I want to play around, not just studying this time, but just this world in which one false step could bring it all down. And I really felt that with Mothman. And I'm like, yeah, there was a, you know, you get some of those little press emails that go out from like Disney and they have like the pictures that you can download. Like 10 of them went out. The only one I downloaded was the Mothma one. There's something so great about it. A lot of it there. We're going to talk about the course of it all here in a bit. And all that saying, this idea of this one false step, that's why I also love Saw Gerrera being there. We'll talk more on that later, but just him kind of showing up when everyone's like, all right, be cool. We got to figure this out. And he's like, hi. I'm here. Let's do it.
I have a perspective. Yeah. And I think one of the things that just makes me feel like, cool, I would love to see this now, is seeing so many of these characters that we kind of don't know. We don't know. We can make guesses about their relationships. You know, you can find maybe here or there on the internet what their names might be. But I'm just so anxious to meet the characters we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, really? Absolutely. Absolutely. The one negative from this trailer, no time grappler.
Come on. Yeah, I need some time grappler grunting going on as he does in the teaser right away at the beginning.
Yeah. Well put together trailer. That's our overall reactions to that and the news. But we are going to get into the trailer specifics. Joseph, man, what do you got for us here? This is going to be a lot of fun diving in.
Yeah, yeah. I want to make sure that we could kind of talk about some of the big picture things. So I dove into the trailer, not going beat by beat and analyzing everything. I'm sure there are plenty of Easter eggs and great spots to see Star Wars pundits talk about all the Easter eggs. But I wanted to go to some kind of the big ideas. So I want to start here early in the trailer. We see a young boy sneaking into what appears to be maybe an Imperial facility. And we have been told in interviews with Tony Gilroy that there is a time jump in the show, that we do see the fate of Cassian's home planet. And then we jump into Cassian's adult years, you know, 5 years before Rogue One, where the majority of the story takes place. So what was your gut reaction to this kid? Did you think it was young Cassian? And if so, is that exciting? Jennifer, what were your thoughts on this kid?
Yeah, I immediately thought it was young Cassian. It kind of reminded me of Rey, actually, you know, poking around in the Star Destroyer. And what I liked about it, and immediately I started thinking, are they going to de-age him? How are they going to do this? Is this going to be a kid who's going to be portraying young Cassian? Does he just look younger without his, like, beard, you know?
I like the idea that we're going to get to the point where we're going to attempt to take, like, a 30-something man and, like, we can make him look like a six-year-old. Yeah.
Exactly. That's where I went to. I was like, well, what is that going to look like? I mean, Diego Luna does look pretty young, but does he look that young?
I'm laughing because I don't know if you both watch are watching the courtesies of What We Do with the Shadows, where Colin Robinson, the energy vampire, is a younger version of himself. And it's just almost intentionally bad. It's just him on it. It's just so now to picture Diego Luna just kind of wandering around on a kid's body. There you go.
No, but I loved it. And the reason why I'm glad that they're going to be focusing on his childhood is because he speaks about his childhood quite extensively, not extensively, but often in Rogue One. Mm-hmm. It's the reason why he's in this fight. Mm-hmm. And so he makes that very clear to Jyn Erso. So let's see it. I want to see that on screen. And it sure looks like we're going to get that.
Yeah, no, I still agree with that. I think one of my favorite lines of Rogue One is that I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. He's clearly, there's clearly so much going on with Cassian through the film. And then that's the explosion, right? And that great fight with Jyn where he's never had the luxury of looking away. You know, I think seeing this kid in knowing that we're going to learn about his planet, if that is young Cassian, big caveat, there's the idea of the power of it and the pain of it that the horror came to him, right? Mm. That he didn't have any choice. When he was young, he experienced things that were not his choice, right? And I think what's really intriguing to me is that, you know, when Rogue One came out and that 6 years old, it felt like he's been committed since he was a kid because he had no choice. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested in seeing, you know, if that is young Cassian, he looks a little older than six. and seeing the experience where I think in real life, when awful things happen around you, sometimes your reaction can be, well, okay, then I become an activist immediately because I know the truth because I don't have a choice. But I think sometimes it's just like if you encounter horror early on in life, you just say, well, that's the world. And what are you going to do about it? Mm. And knowing that this might be a journey of seeing what drove a young man to go, yeah, the whole galaxy's awful. You just got to get by. It's not my problem. I'm really intrigued to see what will the storytelling be to set up that, you know, kind of young push towards cynicism. Mm. What are your thoughts, Ken, on young Cassian?
Oh, man, right there with both of you on this. I wrote down that line. I've been in this fight since 6 years old. And yeah, I agree with you. A little older than six, but give me that sweet, sweet prologue. Like, that's what I want. And yeah, you're right. It could be, you know, his cousin. But it just makes sense. And I love what you're saying, too, Joseph, this idea of, like, what that line meant then when we saw the movie in 2016, getting more information along the way, including either, you know, Catalyst, which didn't really feature it, and or we're just going to get more information of the picture and then getting the Rogue One novelization, which I think added more to Cassian's character as well. You get the bigger picture, but I love your saying of like it was here. It's on his planet. You know, it's like the Empire was there. It was mm-hmm. it was in the industry. It was in his family. We know his family is in his a part in this industry and him just wandering around, whether or not that's just a quick little flashback or an entire part of an episode. I don't know. Don't care. Just what it represents in this trailer is very important. The Empire was there. And there's this the shot of the shoes I want to talk about.
yeah, go for effective. It.
Well, you know, these great shot of the shoes, you know, just basically is leather with a rope tied around them and it almost looked like a burlap sack cut into socks. Made me think of the story. I'm sorry if I'm trying to make this short, but like my late grandfather had told me stories as a Circassian soldier being held captive by the Nazis. And shoes, he would talk about the shoes being a big difference. He told me all the Russian and Ukrainian Circassian soldiers like him had bad footwear and had their feet hurt. And he remembered the pain in his feet. He would tell, he goes, oh, he would in his accent, oh, Kenny, my feet. He would tell me that story all the time. And then he eventually, I've shared some of the story on this show before. He was press ganged into the Nazi army. They put him in the army. He did eventually escape when he had the chance. But he would tell me, one of the last things he did before he marched off to go into that army was give his boots to a Circassian soldier left behind. Mm. And how that guy cried as he put on my grandfather's boots. And he said, once he got into the Nazi army, he said, I was never treated as good as I was in that army. The clothes, the food, the quarters, it was this luxury. They just the difference was what was scary almost. And I'm and sort of focus on the feet as he's going into the Empire and use the line from Cassian and get the fat stuffed, emotionally fat stuffed mm-hmm. Imperial drink and coffee. That's exactly the core of what's going on. And the bad shoes are everything to me. Not just a personal story, but it's just very, very real in the core of what this Star Wars story is. Why the importance of this story is. Why are we going back to Cassian? We saw him die in Rogue One. This is why that we can continue this story of the Imperial oppression in the galaxy this time and why it was important to rebel. It wasn't just a cool thing to do on the playground. There's reasons behind it. There's a purpose behind it.
Mm. Yeah, it's such great storytelling to focus on that detail. That is the kind of detail that is just like essential to being a sentient being living in like just the basic decency of what is needed to survive is footwear. But that kind of thing of if you've never faced not having decent footwear is the kind of thing you take for granted, right? Mm-hmm. That you can't have the empathy to be like, imagine you were just always in pain simply from walking. It is really powerful. I'm so glad you shared that story, Ken.
Yeah, just a great little detail. I mean, beautiful, sad, tragic detail, but an important one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that continues the general thread of gritty and of connected to reality. And I feel like one of the interesting things about this trailer is it was really reminding people that it's connected to Rogue One. This trailer was just screaming at your husband, Jennifer, when it had that bit of text that says, from the creators of Rogue One. Mm-hmm. So really driving home that, if you liked Rogue One, you'll like this. But how do we feel about that? It is this kind of open secret that Tony Gilroy was not just, hey, I did a little rewrites, but he was heavily involved in the final product that is Rogue One. Are we just happy to see from the creators of Rogue One, or is there any sort of tension with the complicated history? How do you feel about that, Jennifer?
Oh, that's an interesting point that I hadn't really thought of. I mean, sometimes they do it like from a business standpoint, like, you know, the person says, well, I want people to know this is my thing, put my stamp on it. But I felt like it was just a really smart marketing thing where it's going to reach the regs who are not obsessing over Star Wars all the time. We have a friend, my husband's friend, who really, I mean, they like Star Wars. He's not really like catching everything, not every movie, not every series. But I remember he said, he's like, Rogue One, now that's a Star Wars movie I really like. He's like, I want them to do stuff like that. So I think about him. When I saw that, I went, oh, well, I know that Jeff is going to really enjoy this series because he really loved Rogue One. It also, to me, it paints a picture. Rogue One was also not for kids. I wouldn't really recommend it for younger kids. Not that some of these series are, but, you know, it skews a little bit older. So I think that's also a way to let people know, like, hey, you're not going to be watching this one maybe with your 5-year-old, right? This is an adult series or young adult series. So from a marketing point, I think it was very, very smart.
Yeah, I think it's a great marketing point. Makes a total sense that they would want to say, hey, Jeff, this one's like Rogue One. Don't have your kids watch. Ken, what are your thoughts?
I love Jennifer's perspective on two things here. Yeah, because being not a parent, I wouldn't immediately pick up on the clue to who not to watch it with. But you're so right. And and that's just the reality of it. Yeah, we love being in the Star Wars bubble. We're going to continue to, I got a sofa, pull out sofa in the Star Wars bubble. I ain't leaving. But there's people like your husband, Jeff, we're not going to pick on them. That's the general audience. We need them to watch these shows. We don't get more of these shows. And I love that. I think it works from that point of view. I did think of it initially, Joseph, to your question I saw some people, even some comments on our YouTube videos. There was one comment about, I'm kind of bummed, like, why wouldn't Gareth Edwards direct one of the episodes? And I just never stopped to think about that. And I'd even throw a little bone there for Gary Whitta, who had a lot to do with the development of the overall Rogue One story and that screenplay before a lot of the changes. And yes, writers, you know, hop on and off projects, or are asked to hop on and off projects, I should say, or forced. But hey, I don't know. History is written by the victors, right? And Tony Gilroy won. So welcome to Hollywood. What's your dream?
I think maybe that is my emotional reaction of like, yeah, I think it was early in the Disney era. I think if all the reports are to be believed, that, you know, Tony Gilroy came in and not only rewrote part of the script, but directed a huge amount of the reshoots, right?
Yeah.
And then Gareth Edwards was just a champ about it, right? He's so nice, so friendly, so supportive, went out there, celebrated the film. And I think there was just a little bit of like, hey, that's the way it goes. Tony Gilroy was heavily involved in the final product of Rogue One. They do want to let all of the Jeffs know, all of us who liked Rogue One, know that, yeah, not only is it like Rogue One, it is from the same creators. So if you liked it, that all makes sense for me. But it's also just like, they've never officially come out and said, actually, Rogue One should have said directed by Gareth Edwards and Tony Gilroy, but we didn't say it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So I think my main reaction to it was, I think this is great. That makes it clear to the general audience, if you like Rogue One, you'll like this. And also made me look up, when is Gareth Edwards' next film coming out? I'm going to be sure to go and support that. It's called True Love, and it's allegedly coming out in October of 2023. But we'll see if that date changes. But he's got another movie coming, and I just think it's hard to be an artist and deal with talking to the public and putting a spin or a positivity on how hard Hollywood can be behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I enjoy his work, and I think he did a great job of being an emissary of this movie. So I want to support his next movie coming out. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I think that's a great way to look at what Garrett did. It was so early on in that era, right? And bigger controversies followed. But I remember hearing back in the press days around the office here, you know, Gareth knew how to play ball. When the situation got bad, he just he sucked it up and played ball. And that's why he was still involved. And I think you're right. He put his best face forward, Joseph, and just kept saying, yep, believe in this. And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we got to see and understand a whole lot of Luthen. He has a great quote where he says, Cassian Andor, the Empire is choking us so slowly, we're starting not to notice. He appears to be a rebel operative, Luthen, capable of blending in with the High Society of Coruscant to meet with Mon Mothma. What does this clarity add to the character to see him kind of operating in multiple worlds? And we see him talking to Saw as well. Of course, we'll talk about Saw in a moment. But right now I want to concentrate on Luthen and seeing these different aspects of him. Ken, did you feel like you understood who Luthen was more from this trailer?
I think he was the star of this trailer, actually. I really, really think it wasn't. And but your quote, that was a great Luthen. I love that he's Cassian Andor. Like, we're already not pronouncing the names correctly. Like, he's going to be, it's Andor. Andor. loved everything about it. I see him as this bridge between the two worlds, or all the worlds. So he's a bridge to every direction we need to go. This key to the movement and the fight that's coming. And so it just kind of positions him well in the story. This trailer really just puts him right in the center. Yes, it's truly a show that is Andor in the title. We see Andor, the most Andor we've gotten so far in trailers and clips and everything. Like, he's got a lot of action. It centers around him. But as even Diego Luna says, there's so much more than that. There's an ensemble. There's so many characters you know. And to see that Luthen and an actor of that gravitas, a favorite critic word, Stellan Skarsgård, it just really works for me. It just really, really fit the tone, fit what I would think a rebel operative or someone trying to start the rebellion would be like in that time, along with the Mothmas and the Greyers and all of them. But I just loved it. It was great stuff. And he's already quotable.
He's already quotable, Cassian Andor.
All right.
Jennifer, what did you think of Luthen in this trailer?
I have in my notes. I'm not being very articulate here. He's all up in this trailer. That was my note.
I'm all up in this trailer.
Oh, man. But even my husband, he's like, wait, who is this guy? Have we seen him before? Because he really seemed like he was the star, obviously he is one of the stars of this show. There was a moment where I was like, wait, is that him in a wig? Is that him? I was confused for a moment, but I'm obviously, you know, he's on spy missions. He's doing things. He's putting that black cloak on, looking like Kylo Ren. I'm loving all the different costumes that he's wearing. And what I think is interesting is that we're going to get some more context on, you know, who he is, why he has become a rebel, why he is a part of this fight. And that, I think, he's not just this cool gravitas, gruff kind of character. We're going to really learn about his motivations. And that, to me, is exciting, is that, you know, in this action spy thriller, we're going to get some really good character development.
Yeah. I'm all up in this rebellion.
I always loved the actor, and I loved his grumbly gravitas in the first trailer. But it's like, how is he different from Saw? Right? Because in the first trailer, he seemed like somebody who's trying to convince Cassian to be all in and do what it has to be done. And like, okay, I know he's going to be different than Saw, but how? And like, this trailer is like, well, here you go. I also, Jennifer, had that age old question. Is that a wig or is this a time jump? Is that from the earlier part of the show, when we're in a slightly earlier part of the time frame, when he has a relationship with Mon Mothma and that's what we're seeing? Or is it like, I got to go to Coruscant and kind of pretend to be someone I'm not, or someone I'm not anymore, and I got a wig to do it? Who knows? What was important to me is to see that he had all of these facets, right? That he was capable. That either he is someone who belongs in the High Society of Coruscant, that he has wealth, that he has a relationship with whoever that woman character is who says, you're slipping. And he's like, no, I'm not. And that he is the one who goes to meet Saw. He's the one who is being a contact for Cassian. The fact that he can, if this is kind of about two worlds, that he's the character who can kind of move between all these worlds and characters, that made him a different character to me than Saw. Mm-hmm. And also it so positioned him as like, oh, you're the version of Cassian that's running out of time. You are Cassian, who is going to train Cassian to be Cassian. You're mm-hmm. the rebel operative who is going to be the mentor, who is going to train Cassian to be like you. And I was like, Luthen is great. This is awesome. Which episode's he going to die in? Episode 10, 11, 12, maybe as early as 6. He's so the mentor. He's this trailer presents him as the model of who Cassian is going to become.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And I can't, you know, whether or not there's clues in any Stellan Skarsgård interview of when he goes or when he doesn't go, I'm not digging up that. I want to take it all as it comes. But I had that same thought, Joseph. Like, right? Like, yeah. Oh, you're a goner, man.
Yeah. It's good to know you, Luthen.
And yeah, the wig game is so funny. Like, remember when that picture kind of came out? First, it was like unofficial. Then there was kind of more of an official release of him and Mothma. And they were like, here's the character Luthen. And I was like, that's not, look at his hair. It's different. Like, I guess I would have fallen for Superman and Clark Kent. I would just would have been like, glasses on, glasses off. And I'm with you. I don't know. I'm predicting wig. I don't know. I'm predicting wig, but I don't, there's just something, because I love that shot, love that sequence when he's putting on the rings and you just feel him kind of going, all right, I got to go into this part of who I am, or this disguise, or this part of what's happening here. And what he, yeah. whether, and I like your idea, Joseph, of like, he could be someone along with Mothma who is up above and doesn't have to get involved, but has no choice but to, or feels he has no choice. Or he is what he is. I don't know. Or he's low playing high. I don't know. There's a lot of ways to go with it, but he is definitely all up in it, as Jennifer has said. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, that was my emotional reaction. Like, I'm not predicting who it could be, right. A time jump, who knows, but my emotional reaction is he is somebody who comes from wealth and lives in that mm-hmm. world, but has become disgusted by it. Mm-hmm. And in order to get what he wants, he has to pretend to be a part of it for a little while, but that's not who he is anymore. That was my emotional reaction. We'll see.
Mm. Yes.
And that choking quote is so great, right? That could be another just sort of log line for the show. It is so true of the history of real world fascism that it gets just a little bit worse. And you're like, well, we can deal with this. It gets a little bit worse and slowly gets unbearable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that was very powerful.
Yeah, maybe think of some of those that we've mentioned before, but that the final sequences with Bail and the Kenobi series of just like the Empire getting more bolder, you know, how it's right. getting worse.
Yeah, absolutely. But perhaps it will get better because Saw Gerrera is here. Saw Gerrera confirmed. We saw Luthen, who is all up in this trailer, also meet with Saw and his band of partisans. We saw a solid shot of two tubes, either Edrio or Benthic, or maybe there's a third twin we don't know about. In their meeting, Saw says basically that they're doing this for the greater good. And Luthen replies, call it what you will. And Saw responds, let's call it war. What are we excited for with the confirmation of Saw and that scene? Jennifer?
Oh, I was so happy to see Saw Gerrera back. And what I'm intrigued by is, you know, he's considered to be an extremist. And that to me is going to make for a good story. It's going to make him very unpredictable, questionable. What is he going to do to accomplish his goal? And what is he going to suggest that they do, or maybe Cassian does. I'm excited. And will we see how he got Borgullet? Do we know that story? I'm sure it's probably in a novel somewhere, or comic that I haven't read.
Not yet, I don't think. We'll get to
no,
it.
No, Borgullet origin would be great. Ken, what were your thoughts about Saw in this trailer?
Oh, man, hold me back. I probably should just say a sentence and move on. I love this, man. I love everything about it. And this is a total paraphrase, but I saw Saw as going, yeah, let's call it war, shall we? Just like, let's start blowing it all up. And while Mon Mothma's over there risking her life, and she is trying to not draw attention to herself, you got him over in the corner just going, cool, I got some rocket launchers. You ready? And this is why I love this era, why I love this story. And if Luthen is the bridge, Saw is the dynamite ready to blow it all apart. And he just continues to be one of my favorite characters. I love what Forrest Whitaker has done with the older version of him. I really do. Mm-hmm. And remember when he first emerged and people were poking fun, as people do, and have your jokes, whatever. I just continue to love it and love this character. And just his life, his losses, his choices, what they bring to this morality tale. I think it's very important. It's not just he's not a bad guy. He's a good guy, mm-hmm. but he may be how he gets there and what happens. He's definitely doing everything for the greater good. But you know, what your actions are built on is still important. And his line that everyone loves, and I know it's a favorite of Gary Whitta, he's tweeted it out before, "The empire treats us as criminals, at least I act like one." And that's both, I think, a powerful truth and a bold statement on how to rebel. But I also think it's potentially selfish and self-destructive. And Mothman's not in that position right now. Luthen appears to be stuck between these two ideas on how to rebel. That's where I even took that scene of kind of him going, damn it, I got to go down to Saw and trying to meet in the middle on this. So I'm just intrigued by, it's not just a, ooh, there's that character. It's a, ooh, here's why that character needs to be there.
Right. Yeah, no, well said. Saw, yes, well said. Saw is holding up a big pile of why.
yes.
I'm also just excited to see both him and the Partisans because they provide space fantasy flavor. I love Rogue One. I love that it's gritty. I love that this is going to be a show where to talk about it is to talk about real life politics, because it is so there. It's so built on experiences that have happened in our real world. But I still love Star Wars being, you know, the most expensive B movie ever made. I still want it to be a little bit of an adventure serial. I don't want it to feel like, yeah, this is the grittier side of Star Wars, but how could this possibly exist with the cantina scene? You know, how could this possibly exist, you know, with the Monte Carlo ballet, you know, in Revenge of the Sith? Like, I want to, you know, still feel that we're in this wild, strange galaxy of 1,000 creatures and 1,000,000 planets you could never imagine. And not only just having the Partisans be fun, weird aliens, but the fact that Forrest Whitaker chooses to go to 11 with his performance of Saw, like, that's why we, you know, poke fun at it, or I just celebrate it, because I want it to be not necessarily one-to-one realism. Yeah. You know, I want characters in Star Wars and performances to be emotionally realistic. I want to know what they're feeling, but I'm fine if the performance itself is not cartoonish, but a little bit elevated. And I feel like that's what Forrest Whitaker does, is just like, this person is a tortured space warrior extremist with who's losing, you know, body parts and his soul left and right. And I'm going to play that fracture. And it's just, I love the flavor of it. And I hope for more of that. And I love this line, which is like, yeah, sure, you can call it whatever you want. It's war, you know, is so great for that flavor. And yeah, just totally embodying the question of, not why do we fight, not should we fight, but how do we fight? In seeing Luthen, like you were saying, Ken, just stuck in the middle of Saw's approach and Mothma's approach is great. And to me, it means that it's going to wrestle with some of these big Star Wars questions of how do we fight? Is, yes, of course, the Empire needs to be stopped, but are we taking actions that we absolutely must? Or is there a part of us, like Saw dances on the edge of like, but it's a part of the reason you're doing it because you are furious and you want personal vengeance. And what does that do to your soul?
Yeah. I promise I won't talk about Saw anymore. I was laughing. You said, you know, Forrest, his performance, we don't think it's cartoonish, but it could be called cartoonish. And I was laughing because, like, when he was a quote cartoon, he was more put together, more kept, and obviously different performer. I just love that Forrest came along, and I haven't read a lot of his insights into his choices, and I don't need them. I just love watching an actor work. But him going in, cool, he's breaking because of the burden of all his losses and what he's fighting for. This is what he should be. This is what he should feel like and sound like and look like. It's exactly why I love the character so much. I think you're so right. It adds that Star Wars flavor to a very realistic character.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please, Jennifer, go ahead.
I'm shocked. I had not heard that people were poking fun at his performance for being like over the top or whatever. To me, it felt very real. And I mean, if you've met people who are on the fringe and who are, you know, unhinged, they're going to be in a heightened state. They're not going to be, you know, what's very common in movie acting and TV acting, I'm talking like this, and I'm just going to not barely move my lips, right? No, like, he is in it. His body is in the cause. He is a rebel. And so I want to see that reflected in the performance. To me, it just makes it so much more real that he would be this leader and be very heightened. So it's just so surprising to me. Although I like Jared Leto's performance in House of Gucci. So, you know, what do I know?
I actually like House of Gucci.
I really loved House of Gucci.
Anyway, me too. I saw it on the plane. I loved it. I was like, why do people fan this? You know, so everyone has their own opinions. But yeah. I think it really, really makes the character very exciting to watch.
It was early on. It was just one of those like, oh, what the hell is he doing type of meme approach to criticism that sometimes we try to emerge out of that pool.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, Jennifer. I feel like if my estranged pseudo space daughter that I left alone with a blaster and a knife because I thought it was best for her suddenly reappeared in my life, mm-hmm. I would probably say it in the same way. Did you come here to kill me? Mm-hmm. It's just raw emotion. It's great. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have plenty of time to talk about Saw. Let's move on to Mon Mothma. Let's talk Mothma. We get to see her in the Senate with an awesome blue jacket in a meeting with Luthen. We hear the great quote that she is saying to what appears to be another high society Coruscant person. As long as everyone thinks I'm an irritation, there's a good chance they'll miss what I'm really doing. This was one of the highlights for me. What clarity do you think this line gives to Mothma's role in the show, Jennifer?
Oh, that line really hit home because as a woman, especially I imagine, you know, in these types of spaces where there's not as many women, or especially in politics, people often see women as irritating or their voices shrill. All these things, right? And that to me, oh, that was very, very powerful. It's like you all are underestimating me or annoyed by me. You have no idea what I am capable of and who I really am. Oh, that that made me excited. There, you know, she's going to be she is a fantastic character, but getting to know her motivations is going to be really exciting.
Oh, Jennifer, I love that perspective. That makes it so rich. I had this weird emotional reaction. I've been excited to see Mothma forever, but I kind of had this reaction this morning seeing this trailer of like, I've known this woman for 40 years, but I've been waiting to meet her for 40 years. Like, who is she really? Because we get to see this stoic leader. We get a little bit more behind the scenes in various, you know, books and comics and in Rebels. But exactly how she handled herself in the Senate, right? Mm-hmm. What was her tactic in this era in knowing that she's letting herself be seen as just a bleeding heart with little pet projects and objections that people can kind of laugh off? There's that question of how exactly is the Senate functioning? Because we know from A New Hope that the Emperor feels like he still needs it until the Death Star is done. We know that, you know, Vader taking Leia is a little bit of a political risk, right? Mm-hmm. So you get the sense that the Senate still has some validity, but what is it? And it was really powerful to think that Mothma is aware, like, I am going to allow myself to be the voice of contradiction, the theater that makes it look like it's a democracy and not authoritarianism. I'm going to be the person that Palpatine can point to and go, see, we're having a debate. It's still a Senate, not just what I say. And she's letting herself be seen like that so she can do the real work that most people aren't seeing or appreciating. That was really, really powerful. Ken, what were your Mothma thoughts?
Well said on both of you there, Jenna. I really appreciate and respect that perspective of what she's doing. It just kind of that shot of her sitting on the couch and the doors closed and she's all alone, locked behind the doors there in this world, so to speak, just kind of, backs up what you're saying there. And I really love what you said. Joseph, you're right. You know, we've known this character for so long, especially for our generation. And yes, it's been a ton of great time. Even Princess and the Scoundrel, there's some great Mothma stuff I read last night. Rebels, so much stuff there. But for Genevieve O'Reilly to say, you get to see, really, you get to go behind the gown, I think, or whatever her exact quote was. And she's just been a statue in a lot of ways because I think she had to, and the burden, and she's just stoic and maybe withdrawn for various reasons. Now to move beyond that, to really see this character, I just love it. And this whole sequence, and actually shout out to Shadows of the Sith author Adam Christopher, who had tweeted out that the actor is Ben Miles, who she's talking to in this one moment where he says, what are you and what are you doing? I got nerd chills at that moment. And there was some, is that Valorum? There's some speculation of who that is. It's probably a new character, I think. But Miles has that kind of vibe of a politician, you know, Valorum at the time, ineffectual figurehead or struggling to not be more than that. And you have him on the couch going, what are you doing? And her, you know, carrying the burden and the brunt of the rebellion up on the upper side of it. I also, you know, I love, as much as I love Saw, you want to yell at him, like, look what she's doing. And I think Mothma knows the time to fight is coming. She always has the big picture and goals in mind. And that's why I think, to me, when she smiles when Radis leaves to fight, you know, like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. We're here. She doesn't want to be there. She knows you can't leap there. And I think perhaps still holds out hope that you don't need to, but I think it's that time has slipped away by the time we see her here. So she's out there to find the right path. And she's, to me, risking just as much as Saw and Luthen. And from a certain point of view, Andor and those who've seen this trailer, because she's not Noor Jebel. She's risking everything, including her life. She's not just her position and her status. She's going to eventually, if she isn't already, risking her life. And that's some of the tension there. So excited for that. That's kind of been present in some of the other materials, but to see it on display here, love everything about it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is no matter how much we've seen Mothma in other materials, and maybe I'm forgetting something, it's almost always what is Mothma doing for somebody else, is, you know, mm-hmm. what mission is she sending somebody on? What is she asking of somebody else? So to get to see her fear, her anxiety, her experience, her sacrifices, it is really, really powerful. I love what you're saying about how powerful the response is from the actor Ben Miles, of like, what are you doing? And you just wanted to turn and go, I'm building the original trilogy of Star Wars. It's yes. really, really powerful and very cool. And I think having both Saw and Mothma in the trailer, it just makes me feel like we are going to get into some of these big picture things of Saw's angrily attacking things here or there, but is he really making a difference? Mothma's the one mm-hmm. doing the work to build something with a long-term view. Mm-hmm. And I'm really kind of curious to see if the show sort of celebrates both or says Mothma's way is the way that's going to make a difference in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know we might want to move on, but I just want to add, because like, a lot of times when I threw out that Guerrera quote about, at least I act like a criminal, a lot of times I've seen that before being used to talk about real world things, which might be correct to use it in the way. I get where it's coming from, but it was kind of used to slag off Mothma in that approach, right? At least mm-hmm. Saw's blowing things up and making a difference. And I think this series potentially is going to show you, no, though he's got a greater good mind, he's got some other things he's working on, but Mothma is risking everything. I'm excited for that, and she is taking action.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Ken, I think we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll get to a couple more beats in the trailer.
Love that. Before we do that, as always, we want to have a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. A lot of great books out there. Joseph, what do we got today?
Well, we want to recommend The Princess and the Scoundrel, but it's not out yet. So we are recommending another great book that has just come out that I haven't had a chance to read anything but the first few pages of, but I really enjoyed them. A lot of great talk about it. The new Obi-Wan Kenobi book, Padawan, by Kirsten White.
That's right. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. That's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. We'll be back to talk more Andor here on ForceCenter.
Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself. And with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet that Andor might be sneaking into. We are talking about the Andor trailer, everything about it, what it means, what we like, the thrills, the chills, all of it here. Joseph, we got a lot more to get to. What is next on the docket?
Yeah, we're going to try to keep cooking by putting all the Imperial stuff in one big bucket. The Imperial presence is obviously huge in the trailer. We have a return of the emotionally fat and satisfied calf drinkers of the Empire being criticized by Cassian. We have a great shot of a Star Destroyer swooping low over the beautiful grassy hills and people being terrified. We see a shot of, it looks like, Luthen engaging with a ship that is the Arrestor cruiser based on Colin Cantwell's original Star Destroyer designs, which is very cool. We see those Imperial types in the gray and red uniform, and one of them is complaining to another, "It's fomenting out there, sir. Pockets of fomenting." Then we see this young blonde Imperial woman, and she is heard saying, "You're in my net. Are you a fish or are you a thief?" And we see a lot of shots of this particular Imperial. There's a ton to talk about. But I want to ask specifically how we're feeling about seeing this young woman Imperial in live action. In the books, in the comics, we have seen a lot of young women Imperials, but we haven't seen them as much in live action as main central characters. And this character kind of feels like she is maybe like one of the main active antagonists. Jennifer, what are your thoughts or reactions to that?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it felt very fresh. I mean, we have a very specific idea of what like a Star Wars villain looks like. This is a newer type of villain. The fact that she's young, I'm going to guess that she wants to, you know, she wants to move up the ranks. She craves power, all the things that we expect of the Imperials. I was thrilled. Because it paints a different type of a villain that is obviously anybody can be a villain. So why not this beautiful, young, attractive woman? Why not? That's what I got.
I'm excited to see some variety, right? Because the main active antagonist, and we have seen the flashes of what is a little bit more of the stereotypical Imperial of the older, great British European actor, in the science lab. But what we're seeing so far from her is that she seems like the one on the ground who is aware that people are doing things and trying to arrest them, trying to stop them. And I love the idea that we might get to see lots of different ways how people are swept up in Imperial dogma, that we get to see the true believers, that we get to see those emotionally fat and satisfied Imperials who are maybe just like, this is the legitimate government and this is the great job and those rabble rousers causing problems, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody as young and intense as this woman, why does she believe? And again, we've gotten good stories like this in the books and comics, but I'm really excited to see why does this woman believe in live action. Ken, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, to the first point there, it's about time, right? Inviting everyone to the Star Wars table means everyone can play evil characters too. Is what I think.
Exactly.
And I hope she mentions her cadet classmate, Ray Sloan, though. That's the one thing I'm hoping for that. And no, it's a great point, Joseph. And it was Keita's trailer. And I'm going to probably echo some of the stuff you're saying here, but I'm fascinated to learn about, you know, what either brought her to this fight or what keeps her there. And to me, it's interesting. And Rae Sloane, I one of the reasons she's such a popular character, she represents a lot of this. It's interesting to see when someone that might otherwise fit into an oppressed class, in this case, it's, you know, one based on her presented gender and perhaps her economic and social class growing up, finds power and then uses it to uses that power that might otherwise be used against her. And that's, you know, we don't know a lot about this character, and it could be a character like Rae Sloane. That's more of like Rae Sloane's background. It could be like Aiden Versio, someone raised in wealth and privilege and never questioned it until later, if at all. And I'm not predicting a redemption story at all. There's a lot of ways to go with this character. We're just looking at what we got here in the trailer. But I'm just fascinated. It's part of this era. It's part of the storytelling. Part of what makes Star Wars so important, I think, at times, as well as Boar Gullet sulliness. All that's in there. But she could represent a lot of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like there's so much in this show that is about family. You know, we don't have all the clarity, but for me, just my emotional reaction watching these trailers and these conversations, that there's a lot about the connections between different people and, you know, keeping family members safe, family members expecting something different of you. And it makes me wonder with her if we're going to maybe get an Aiden Versio-like story where, like, this is her family. You know, her family is all in on the Empire and she is expected to be as well and has never questioned the dogma.
Yeah.
Any other Imperial moments that we wanted to react to? Jennifer, were there any other Imperial moments that thrilled or horrified you?
I mean, the calf drinkers, just the it was a great shot. And in the Imperial type, the one that is fomenting out there, sir. I loved that. I thought that was just very very British period film. Sire, they're coming, sire. I loved it all. I loved it all. And of course I could speculate, but it's just there's were a lot of like shots that were there for flavor and just there for like to give us an essence and a vibe. And you know, I don't even need to know what it is. I'm just like, yes, I like that. Okay, give me another shot of a shuttle. Why not? With this haunting music.
Yeah.
You know, there just was like just shots, like random shots like that. And I couldn't even really start to put together the story just because I was just so mesmerized visually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's kind of nice to be able to like, well, we know lots of things, but we don't know for sure certain characters. So it makes it, a little bit harder to piece it all together. Mm-hmm. I love those Imperial types in the gray and red uniform. We've kind of speculated before that maybe there's some sort of like local planetary force that have been sort of deputized to be the local Imperials, like the community, the Empire using the community to watch over the community kind of infiltration. But
the mall cops.
Yeah.
Right.
Contracted forces. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Contracted forces. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And like kind of, you know, sibling against sibling of they convince the one who thinks the Empire is providing order. They get them to join this, you know, Imperial watch group and watch over their own people. You know, that's the vibe I get. Could be entirely wrong, but I just love the intensity of that one. Pockets of fomenting, you know, saying pockets of fomenting, like it's like we all know that turn of phrase, and that's the worst thing that can happen. You know, I had a great trip, but then during the trip, there were some pockets of fomenting. It's awful. Ken, you're a big Imperial fan. Going back, and I know that you wrestle with the meaning of the Empire these days, but still you've been a long-term fan of the characters, the aesthetic, the world. So what's grabbing you?
Hey, the toys, man. They got those cool toys. And there was a lot of cool toys. Seeing a Lambda-class shuttle, in 2022, a new shot of it, that just gets me excited. Those Star Wars nerd chills show up in a lot of different ways, and that's one of them. I love, private security force or local police force or a new kind of Imperial. Maybe they tried out a different color scheme for a while. Who knows? We'll find out. I love everything about it. And you got, was it Kyle Soller, who's see a lot of shots of him in all the trailers so far. And we don't do straight up predictions here all the time, but I'm kind of predicting he might have a change of heart. He just has that look on his face of what's going on here.
Yes.
I don't know. It could be wrong. I love it. I love the, you see the fact Adria Arjona is the other performer we're seeing in the trailers as well.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And her running, and she's been running in a lot of the trailers, and to see her kind of facing off with them and dealing with them. Yeah, just kind of adds to some of the importance there. But overall, and there's that one shot at the end there. You know, we got some TIE fighters. We got Cassian flying in that sea of red. There's a one shot of a stormtrooper. And I just had that weird reaction. I was like, oh, yeah. Our friends are here. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so more stormtroopers are probably going to go down in this show. There's also this shot toward the end of the older woman from the first trailer with a tear running down her cheek. And it could be trailer cut magic. But in the trailer, it appears that the droid B2 Emo seems to be comforting her. What was your emotional reaction to this woman, Jennifer? Do you have speculation on who she is? Anything on about that?
I don't. And I was trying to remember. It goes by so fast. I need to go back and rewatch it. Cassian's grandma? I don't know. Who is this lady? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a direct blood relation or not, but there's just something about this kind of older woman, this person of wisdom, and to see her in the previous trailer, she's saying something along the lines of like this, you know, this is what happens. Revolution comes. I'm super, super paraphrasing, but she has like kind of a word of wisdom. And in that, she kind of seems like, oh, she's this strong voice. So then to see her kind of weeping, I just kind of feel like maybe she is a strong family leader, community leader type who is, you know, being broken down by the horror. And we also know that B2 Emo is a Andor family droid. So I wonder if she does have a connection to the family. Mm. Ken, what were your thoughts?
Well, I love that we see someone crying around B2 Emo, possibly. It's right. What we all want from this droid here. You have Fiona Shaw, who's in Killing Eve, among many, many, many other things in this role. And yeah, the line, that was the key line of that first teaser, right? This is the sound of a reckoning, or that's the sound of a reckoning.
Yes.
Great
yes.
scene, great line. So to see her now and clearly affected, I kind of took it as someone who has seen and suffered through it all, right? Not just the Empire, but the Clone War and the dark shadows of the Republic trying to do right by everyone before that, but maybe sometimes failing, which lead to some of those bigger separatist issues. And so to me, that she might be there's thematically to represent that this fight is generational and the next generation is fighting for to honor those in the past just as much as changing the road ahead. And so she was great in the teaser. One shot. It was really effective to have that person who in the first trailer was like, yeah, we're going to fight. That's reckoning. Now is crying, which is the burden of this and why you're fighting. And that represents a lot in just one little second and one little tear.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I can't wait to spend more quality time with B2 Emo. And on that note, those are kind of like the some of the big things that are known. Obviously, we see a lot of shots of characters that we don't fully know who they are, what their relationships are. But I did want to ask, Jennifer, were there any other characters, moments, or quotes that you wanted to touch on?
I can't think of any at the moment, but there was a Planet of the Apes-like character in the background.
Yes.
Did you see him?
Yes, this is, he's in, I believe, the species. I have no idea how to say it. It's O-N-G-I-D-A-E, Ongidae, better known as the security of the Canto Bite casino, Pemmin Brunts. That's the species.
Yes.
Yes, but on quick viewing, is like, did they paste in Caesar from Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
That's funny.
But I doubt it is actually Pemmin Brunts who's like, yeah, I fought in the revolution and then I became security at the Canto Bite Casino. But it is, I think, a continuing using some of the new designs that happened in the sequel era to seed these Disney Plus shows.
Mm. Right. Oh, yeah. I'm looking them up now. Okay. There you go. Oh, well, that was fun. Yeah, I always, you know me, I'm always into the aliens and the creatures. So I'm like, where are they? Yeah. Not too many, but nope. That's all right. I'm sure we'll get more once the show comes out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that was brought up before, even on our own Force Center Discord of the last teaser, like, hey, not a lot of aliens. And then you got Michael Scanlon going, yeah, we pretty much made another movie. Neil Scanlon, sorry, not Michael.
Neil Scanlon, Neil Scanlon. Right.
Yeah, we pretty much made another Rogue One movie with all the creatures. So they're out there. They'll emerge, hopefully front
and center. And we did see the four-armed person with the goggle eyes.
Yes.
Once again, my space fantasy pulpy heart was delighted to see some weirdness.
Oh, yes, yes, with the Gormanda arms. I was like, all right.
Is this a relative of Gormanda? This is going to be the best clickbait video we could ever do. Is he related to Gormanda? Ken, was there any other characters or quotes you wanted to touch on?
I just go to the pre-platy. Tony Gilroy, we're going to add in this character for the holiday special. What's the holiday special? Don't worry, just put the character. All right. Now, we covered so much. I thought this is a great trailer. It set the tone. Just the ominous stuff going on. So I'll rewatch it and come back to this question on further episodes again and again and again.
Excellent. So that's kind of our look at the trailer. I did want to just touch very briefly on the Diego Luna interview on Good Morning America. There are a couple of interesting quotes, but in particular, I wanted to share this one. He's talking about the shooting process, the filming process. He's talking about himself like he's a kid in a candy store getting to play. And he's so charming. And he says, everything is real. Everything is there. We don't work with greens. The stuff is built. The props work. They make noises. The pilots are shaking around. And the host even laughed because he's demonstrating. He's so into how real it was. I also saw there's a recent article from Empire also discussing this where he's talking about like, yeah, there was one shot. We just needed one shot, but we like climbed for hours up a mountain. It's all real. How are you both feeling about that conversation coming around again of, not much CGI. We're not using the volume. This is real. Ken?
Yeah, I feel weird commenting on this with this wonderful Light and Magic series out there letting us know that none of it was real. It was all magic in studios, right? I love it. Look, I've already seen people say, this show looks the best of all the series. And and I'm part of the leader of that sometimes, and I don't want to spin it against the folks who are making the other shows or the magic of the volume and what can happen with those LED screens. And I guarantee some of it's probably in here, right? I guarantee more than what Diego said, much like I think of Force Awakens. It's all practical. It really wasn't. And I'm fine with that world, right? I'm fine with it. It looks good. It looks bigger. It looks just looks a little bit more real, and that's just the way it is, and I'm excited about it. I know it's not cost-effective for every series, and the tech on the other shows is going to get better and better and better, so I'm confident going forward with all styles, all shows, but this just makes me excited. I like props that work.
Yep. I think it's great for this show because it is appears to be so much of a story about people who are very grounded, very, connected to their environment. It makes you feel the pain when the Star Destroyer, that was a real Star Destroyer. They flew over those hills, right? No CGI. It makes sense for this show. And I'm very curious to see once it all plays out. It's 12 episodes. There's a part of me that thinks it was feasible to do real sets, locations, because they're being used for multiple episodes, which makes it much more affordable. It's not a Star Wars show necessarily that's hopping from planet to planet. You have to build entirely real sets for characters to be in for 60 seconds, one episode, and then never again. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what are your thoughts on the real?
Yes, I read the Tony Gilroy interview with Empire magazine this morning about that. Saying they didn't use the stagecraft, the volume, they were building massive sets at Pinewood, shooting on location. I like both things. Why can't one? Why not both? Right? I think. I mean, there is something to be said about it being shot on location with these massive sets. It will look more consistent with Rogue One. So that in and of itself to me, I think is important. But I love The Mandalorian. I love the volume. I love all those shows. I think that it allows for some really incredible acting moments that we got, like say with Ewan McGregor or. So I don't know, but there is something also as about an actor being able to be on that mountaintop in acting. You're there in that moment. There's no faking, right? There's no LED panels behind you. So that's also great. I don't know. Some might say I'm a Libra. I'm not an astrology person, but I am always about balance. This is one of those moments.
I was going to say, you're the Luthen of this conversation out in the world. There's many bridges to get there.
Well, I think that's great, too. And I think that sometimes there's been made too much of celebrating one or the other, right?
Yeah.
And Light and Magic does drive that home of like, it's so cool to see it. Like, they physically made the X-Wings. Those were all real. And then just so many scenes are like, oh, yeah, I probably knew, but I totally forgot how many things are matte paintings. And how different is that? Oh, they only had a tiny bit of real set and the rest was a painting. That's the same as some of the CGI stuff we talk about, It really invited me back to to balance. Some things it worked great to shoot with more real sets. Some things work great in the volume. Let's enjoy the show. I had also written down some quotes from Diego Luna about why they were doing the delay in the 3-episode release. Cause he was just spitting. He was just kind of trying to say, hey, you're going to get it all at once. I feel like we're going a little bit long. So if it's okay with you guys, we'll move past that. And I'm sure we'll have many opportunities to discuss that in the future. And we already kind of discussed it at the top. So, Ken, I'm going to pass the ball back to you.
We're really quickly going to end this show, as we always do here on the news show this week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars past. I would maybe skip past this too, but I can't miss this opportunity. On August 6, 2001, about 9 months ahead of the film's release, the second chapter of the Star Wars saga received its full title, Star Wars Episode II: Attack of the Clones. This title has been controversial from this day in 2001 to this very moment. A silly sci-fi title, a wonderful ode to the serial adventures that fueled George's desires to create Star Wars, all the above and more. Let's go back to this day. What were your initial thoughts to the reactions and your reaction to that title? I think we kind of know now, but let's focus on then. Jen, that day, August 6, 2001, where were you and what did you say?
Oh my gosh, I can't even remember so far back. I will remember this, that the verb attack, right? It's very aggressive. It sounds very action-packed. So I remember feeling very excited about that because, as I've expressed before, The Phantom Menace wasn't quite the vibe that I had expected from Star Wars. So I was like, oh, maybe this one will be more in line with my expectations. Yeah. So I liked it. It sounded thrilling.
That's nice. It's great to look at it. I'll go next because I think it's important that Joseph ends this thread. I went, what the hell is this dumb title? What is it, like a 1950s sci-fi movie? What are we doing here? What's George doing here? So I'd like to say that I used to be dumb. I'm not smart now, but I'm at least a little bit pause for insights to come into my brain. Yeah, that was kind of the point. And is it still one of my favorite titles? I don't know. I hate ranking it in titles, but it might come in lower. But at the same time, like you said, Jen, it's pretty much full of action. It pretty much captures the vibe of this wonderfully wild and wondrous and sometimes awkward movie. And I've grown with it. I've grown as a person. But on August 6, 2001, I think I went, beep, what the hell? Beep, George, what are you doing to me, man? So there you go. Joseph, I must cop to my sins. What about you?
Oh, you had a reaction and you processed it. No sin there. loved it then. Love it now. It is a part of my soul. I love this. So it was the clones part of it, right? Of just like, hey, yeah, the Clone Wars coming in these prequels eventually, right? I've been wondering about this for years. Here we go. It's the promise fulfilled in the title. And then the fact that it was called Attack of the Clones. I've never had an issue with the part of Star Wars that is a B-movie, that is a pulpy serial adventure. I was so used to comic books. Every comic book I read would have a title of like Baptism of Fire. Every other Doctor Who serial is Of Doom or Of Death is the title. You know, blank of blank. It's, to me, it's what I want. I understand that some people bump up against it, but to me, I had to like look around and be like, why are people upset? It's like you're eating a piece of pizza and you're like, why is there cheese and tomato sauce? Like, well, that's usually what a pizza is. This is what it is. That's where I go in my darkest moments, because I just feel like it's not an aberration. It's a huge part of what Star Wars is. It is the big myth. It is this deep emotional story. It's a million things. But at its beginning, Star Wars is a B-movie serial mashed up with myth. And I just love and continue to celebrate that side of Star Wars. So thank you, Attack of the Clones.
Hey, and thank you for all of you allowing me to have some growth over the years. You didn't know me back then, but thank you for letting me have it. No, well said, Joseph. That is exactly what I wanted to hear this day in history coming up this week, August 6, 2001. All right, that is it. We are out for this week. Thank you all for letting us talk about this Andor trailer. We loved it. We are the Force Center Podcast feed. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Thank you to all who watched our live Q&A last Friday. We like doing those about once a month. We appreciate your support. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. You can listen to us on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can find me at Catnapsuck or go to catnapsuck.com for more. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Jennifer Landa, TikTok, Jennifer Landa 1138. I have a couple videos out now, some from Italy, and yeah, I'll have more on the way.
Absolutely. All right, Joseph, you.
Yeah, you can find me Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures. If you're planning on going to the convention in Minneapolis, Convergence, you can go to josephscrimshaw.com/live shows to check out my full schedule at Convergence, including a new stand-up show I'm real excited about. All that on josephscrimshaw.com.
Check it out. That is it. So for Luthen and Cassian Endor getting all up in that rebellion, we'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.